SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, my name is Sherry Lee Watson. I'm an Aranda woman from Central Australia and I'm an actor.
And you grew up in Alice Springs. What was life like for you growing up there?
It was deadly. I was surrounded by big community and family. My family, we live on our native title land on outstations just west of Alice. And my family are some of the TOs for that area. And it was really nice. There's a beautiful community there that is still thriving today, and I think that's what's holding a lot of the town together is those familial connections. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just like biggest mob and lots of community events, and you know, there's always somebody to ring.
And how often do you get to like go back home and spend time with your family?
More often these days post-COVID, like after the pandemic. Unfortunately, I got actually stuck in Victoria during it, which was a massive blow on my mental health and my family's as well. But I at least every couple of months at this point, but I'm going back to live there for a little while in April, because it's been, I left when I was 14 to go to boarding school. I got sent to boarding school. Otherwise, I probably would have had a higher chance of just like not finishing year 12. And yeah, so I'm 25, turning 26 now. So it's been over a decade. So I need to just go home and sit down for a little bit.
Yeah. And you just mentioned there that you moved out of home when you were 14 and you went to boarding school. What was that experience like for you, like being away from your family and your friends at such a young age?
It was a lot. The culture shock was pretty terrible, you know. It was just going into completely different worlds where I was just not aware that people were living like that. You know, like I grew up in Alice Springs thinking that Aboriginal people were the majority my entire life, and it really was a shock to the system when I kind of left for the first time and realised that wasn't the case. And I had to adjust a lot of things about myself that I'm still kind of figuring out how to, I guess, live with these today. Like I changed a lot about how I talk and just like a lot of my own mannerisms. Like my code switching became very hardcore when I was put into that space. And I think a lot of young mob who leave community and have to figure out how to kind of survive in this other world go to that, and they go to code switching, and then you have to deal with this big identity crisis on top of being a teenager. And you know, and that was just like going to a private school and going to being housed and having shelter and having my education. Like I can't imagine what the shock is like for a lot of young mob who have to exit community under some more serious circumstances, and you know, whether or not they're being locked up or if they're being taken from their homes. It's, yeah, I just can't imagine.
What was it like being like in a boarding school environment? It'd be very different to, you know, just like living at home with your family and just being like, I guess, you know, like when you're at school and you have like an argument with like one of your friends, you know, you can go home, you can get away from it all. But when you're at boarding school, you know, you're kind of like that, you're surrounded by that constantly. And also just being around different people that, like you said, it's like a culture shock. So what's like, what was that like?
Yeah, it was different. Like, again, that was part of the shock, you know, like the example that you gave with having conflict with somebody at school. Like my conflict resolution skills growing up in Alice Springs was just expect a fight to happen and, you know, expect people to rock up with their phones at the interchange and, you know, people have a fight and then they just shake hands and walk away. But that obviously doesn't happen when you go to like a fancy boarding school in Geelong. So I had to learn a lot of that, how to just mediate and how to communicate to these people who I've never really spoken to before properly. It was really hard living with people whose families might have had like a a lot more money than mine did, and kind of dealing with that on top of everything else. And just, you know, there was a lot of guilt being away from home and watching other family members pass away, or watching things happening in community and you not being able to be there. And it, yeah, I think it took a lot from me.
Another question, like, how did you end up, like, going to boarding school? Was it, like, something that you really wanted to do?
No, so I had a mentor at the time who, and her name was Shelley Bestman, and she was an amazing woman who worked for a program at the middle school I was at. I was at a place called Centralian Middle School, which is the only public middle school in Alice Springs, and she was a part of this program that was run by the Smith family, who eventually ended up going on to fund my scholarship, and this program was called Girls at the Centre, and it was similar to kind of like Clontarf or Stars Academy, which the like primary aim was to keep young kids in school, and it wasn't exclusively for Aboriginal kids the way that like Clontarf is. Mm. It was just, you know, aimed at like school with not a lot of funding or like kids from low socioeconomic backgrounds to just stay in school. So they would run after school programs and organize trips to Melbourne and stuff like that to kind of see what life is like out of Alice Springs. And she had overheard me talking about how I didn't think I was probably going to finish school or something, because, you know, it just wasn't a lot like the expectation at home, and the dropout rate in the public schools, especially for young Indigenous kids in the NT, I think still now maybe is pretty high. Mm-hmm. And she didn't want that at all. She was very vocal about that. I'd also happened to be school captain at the time, because I'm just a very competitive person, and I, you know, did a lot of these like leadership forums and stuff. Richmond Footy Club would come and run the Real Camp, which is like a program that they do for young mob, and I just was really interested in like a lot of the seminars and the programs they were doing, and I seemed to have flourished in it. And she saw that and pushed for me to apply for these scholarships, and I was just kind of, it went one in one ear and out the other, and I was like, oh, I don't really, yeah, I guess like I'll do that, I've got nothing else to do. And so she kind of did a lot of the heavy work and did a lot of the applications for me and got me the interview through the Smith Family IYLP Scholarship, which is the Indigenous Youth Leadership Program. And they funded me to go down and interview at the school that I eventually went to. And then I got in and, yeah, spent years 10, 11 and 12 there boarding.
That's really, yeah, it's an interesting story, just like hearing how, you know, like you kind of, like the path to get actually going down there and going to boarding school.
Yeah.
But what first sparked your interest in acting? Was it when you were there? Like, did you start doing acting like at school, or what was like, was there a moment when you knew that that was something that you wanted to do?
Yeah, I've always been into performing arts. I think, I don't know, just like a lot of, I don't want to talk for all blackfellas, but, you know, I think a lot of us are quite cheeky and we love to tell stories, and you know, from like, especially just from what I saw growing up, a lot of desert mob, we all love to sit around the fire and just kind of tell stories. Like that was our pastime. Everyone comes over and talks and gossips, or you know, and then when people start getting rowdy, the stories are performed, and like we're very animated in the way that we storytell and share things. And I think I just picked that up from a lot of my older siblings and a lot of mums and, you know, parents and stuff. Just, and then I was always singing. I'm probably a singer first. I got into music way before I got into acting. I was always in choir and I'd perform at like the Centralian of Stedford, and I grew up playing trumpet because the NT Music School had a really good program in the public schools where they'd send music teachers and go and teach kids who wanted to learn. So I was like always put my hand up for stuff like that. And, yeah, I just always loved performing, and singing was, like, the main thing that I really enjoyed doing in my pastime, because we didn't have internet or, you know, Foxtel or Austar or anything like that in my house, because we live out on the block, which is what everybody calls the outstations that we live on. So we had no reception and just free-to-air TV, so I entertained myself by, like, singing. And, yeah, when I went to the school that I went to, they had a good drama program. They had like a whole dedicated performing arts building. Like a lot of the Victorian private schools, the funding, or just like in Australia, the funding goes primarily towards the sports. So the fact that they had the entire arts centre was pretty phenomenal to me, and I really appreciated that. I just got into doing like the school musicals, and I loved music theatre. I went on to go and study music theatre at uni. But I really, really, really fell in love with the craft while I was at high school, because they'd put on a musical every 2 years, a play every other year. And then I always did drama, and I did theatre studies in year 12, and I just love it.
And were there any actors or like storytellers that inspired you, like when you were younger or when you were at school, that you like really looked up to?
Yeah, like all the main ones, especially in Australia. Like I love Deb Mailman. I've always just been really drawn to her and her rawness and realness, and I've never ever seen that on the screen. And or, like every time I saw her, I just kind of was reminded of the fact that I was like, oh wait, I can do that if I wanted to. And I just love her so much. And she, you know, I haven't met her yet, and it's crazy because I was like nominated against her, like with her, in for the actors, and I was just like blown away by that. And I was like, I don't even care if I'm winning or not. I'm going to go there and meet her. But she didn't go, but that's okay. I'll meet her at another thing. But yeah, her, grow up when Brand New Day came out, that was pretty like deadly, because it was a musical with blackfellas in it. And I was like, whoa.
Right up your alley.
Yeah. And I loved it so much. And then, yeah, just like a lot of the mob, the trailblazers and stuff, you know, like Miranda Tapsell, Shari, all those girls from Sapphires, and then just like people from the States.
Can you tell us about your time studying at the Victorian College of the Arts?
Yeah, so I auditioned for VCA at the end of high school, which was, I'd graduated in 2016, and then I got into this program. So basically when you audition for VCA, for people who don't know, it's a very competitive process. They have about, for the music theatre program, I think they can have like up to 500 or 600 people audition, and they only accept 20 people. And I grew up singing and acting, but I didn't grow up doing formal dance training, and that's one of the disciplines that you need to be able to achieve to a professional level while you study music theatre. And I did the audition in 2016 to try and get into the Bachelor of Fine Arts, but my dance just wasn't quite up to scratch. I didn't even know like a lot of like ballet positions and stuff like that. You know, I ran out of the dance audition, and an incredible woman called Margot Fenley, who was head of drama at the VCA at the time, kind of chased me out of the audition, like came after me. And, you know, I think I made up a fluff and said, oh, I'd like hurt my ankle or something like that. And she was like, well, come back in. I still want you to stay to the end of the audition. And then what happens at those auditions is you do the dance call, and then the judges and the professors will hand out callbacks there. And it was me and another person who got given the callbacks. Much to a lot of other people's demise in the room, and I could feel the searing hate for me, the girl who ran out of the dance audition, getting the call back. And I think Margot might have seen something in me, maybe in my singing or my acting, I'm not too sure, but I'm very, very, very grateful, and I owe like a lot of my career to her, because she was the person who got me into the room. And that so I did the callback, and then I again didn't get into the Bachelor, but at the time VCA were actually running this incredible bridging course called the Foundation Program, which is a bridging course, and it was free at the time in 2017. It basically said that I could they chose 14 people who have the potential to make it into the Bachelor, but might not be up to scratch with one of the disciplines. So there were people who had been dancing their whole lives, but they maybe needed a little bit of singing training, people who maybe needed a little bit more acting confidence. And in my case, I needed a little bit more foundational dance training. And so we would train for 3 days a week at the college, or the Melbourne University South Bank campus, which is their fine arts campus. And we would be amongst the bachelor kids, and kind of watch them do some of their classes and just be kind of enthralled in that environment. And then at the end of that year, you have to re-audition again to try and get into the Bachelor, and that's not a guaranteed spot. So it actually is a bit cutthroat and brutal, and does set you up for the competitiveness of the industry, even though it is a bit traumatizing, because you make friends with these people and you want to get into your dream school, and you spend a year with like 13 other people making really amazing friends and you know, going to these very vulnerable places in acting training as you do, and then you have to re-audition against them and not everyone gets in. I got into The Bachelor after I auditioned that year, so I started my Bachelor of Fine Arts in 2018.
Yeah, it's really interesting, like the journey and the path that, you know, you took to get there. And like you said, like it does set you up for, you know, the industry, because it is cutthroat and you have to take, you know, like a lot of criticism and setbacks and obviously a lot of no's before you can, you know, before you get like a yes. So it does set you up to kind of understand how this whole world works. But I just want to move on to your TV debut, playing Missy in Heartbreak High, a reboot of the iconic 90s series. Mm. What was that like, stepping into that role and being part of such a well-loved show, and like it's just so iconic?
Oh, it was amazing. I think the timing was pretty extraordinary as well. After COVID, because I'd done all of my third year online, which is really difficult to do performing arts training while you're online and on Zoom. You're doing tap classes in your driveway and stuff like that on a camera, and you're being assessed. And it was like, I didn't intend to book my particular agent, who happened to be a screen agent, because at the end of third year, you do a thing called a showcase where like the agents interested in stage performers around Australia will come and watch kind of the big three schools. And a bunch of agents will come and watch, and it gets very competitive, and they'll give some people offers and some people won't get offers. And I got an offer from my current agent, who is based in Sydney, and he happens to work predominantly in film and TV. And that was, I took a bit of a gamble on him and went with him, never met him in person. And then one of the first things that arrived in my inbox was the Heartbreak High audition. And I actually went for another role. I went for Amory, which is played by Aisha Madden, who is one of my very good friends and very, very talented, who also studied music theatre at BCA.
Oh, did you know each other before?
Yeah, so her and James were actually 2 years above me at drama school. So they were in third year when I was in first year. James plays Darren. So I knew the both of them before we'd booked Heartbreak. And I didn't know that those two had booked it until we had our very first read-through in 2021, which was probably around June or July. And we'd all logged onto the Zoom and saw the cast for the first time for our first ever read-through, and I saw those two and just kind of screamed, because this was, like, you got to remember, this is coming after 2020 BLM movement, and especially in the arts, and especially in Melbourne, there was, like, a lot of movement on the scene around more inclusive casting in theatre, and just kind of, like, a lot of people calling out how whitewashed a lot of the theatre in Melbourne at the time was, and is swinging back that way currently. And so to have, you know, like three POC, like music theatre, performing arts people book like a Netflix show, which was just kind of unheard of. And so we were just blown away at that time by the fact that we'd kind of, like, a lot of us had been campaigning for that past year to get more inclusive and diverse casting. And then, yeah, we just happened, like, our lead was cast and it was Aisha, and then our second on the call sheet was James. And then, you know, I'd got my that was my first job out of drama school, was to be a series regular in that show, which has, like, changed my life, made some of my best friends. You know, it's taught me so much about acting, and I prefer screen at the moment. You know, we didn't do a lot of screen training in uni. Screen acting is very different to theatre acting. You're communicating on a completely different medium, so you have to be able to alter your performance and be able to communicate really big things very subtly, whereas music theatre is kind of the opposite. It's very, it's like Shakespeare in a way. It's, takes these very big, big topics and communicates them to an audience, to a live audience, in a very big, heightened way. Whereas screen acting, everything happens in your eyes and in the subtleties of your movements, and, you know, how human can you make them. And it's nothing that I was taught at uni. I did like maybe a semester of it, and it was a big, it was another kind of a culture shock to go onto a film set as opposed to a theatre rehearsal room and just learn how it all worked. And I just fell in love with the whole process, the lingo, like watching how the crew works, being able to watch the crew work when you're in film and TV, and how they set up everything and how they're just so efficient and communicate in their own vocabulary is so different, because in theatre, you don't watch the crew work. You know, they bump in the show and then you've got the stage, you get tech rehearsals, but you don't get to see everything that happens behind the stage. And it was just, yeah, it's amazing. I love learning about it and just being amongst everything in this world.
And had you watched the original like Heartbreak High before landing this role?
I watched it when I got the role. I think I'd seen maybe a little bit of it, but I didn't watch the entire thing. I wasn't like a fan of it. And then I watched it and I liked it. I enjoyed it. And then I realized we made an entirely different show from that original series. And I'm very grateful to the original series for providing a stepping stone for our show. Because, you know, a lot of amazing Australian actors started their careers on that show.
And Thomas Weatherill is another incredible First Nations actor on the show. And you worked alongside each other. What was that like?
Yeah. So it was incredible. Like, it made the experience just, like, amazing tenfold. Like, it was... But it wasn't only, like, Tom. It was, you know, from season one, we had Sarah Khan, who's an Aboriginal woman. She's Aboriginal and Pakistani. She's a writer. She's an incredible film and television writer who actually helped create a lot of the main characters. She created my character of Missy. And she was one who was really championing Tom and I when we, you know, came on. Tom is an incredible man. Like, I love him. Me and him kind of like, I go at him like he's my brother. And I'm very happy to argue with him all the time. And we just have that really nice, beautiful friendship where we can just like, you know, be really like intellectual the way that we approach the craft and have deep conversations about acting, but then still come back to being a couple of kids, one from Rocky and one from Alice at the end of the day. And that, it's really nice to have somebody who can relate to a lot of that stuff. And even Katanya Maynard, who is she's another Aboriginal woman who joined us in season two, and she's really deadly. That's my sissy. She's making waves in the Australian industry at the moment. She's an incredible actor. It's good to have another black woman as well who, you know, can understand the nuances of what it's like to juggle two worlds a lot of the time. And you go and, you know, you have conversations about representation, diversity and inclusion, and then, you know, these big kind of talks at work and, you know, do all of this stuff and then go home to a lot of really hardcore serious stuff sometimes, you know, like going back to the NT, especially growing up under the intervention, it's like the difference of the worlds, you know, going and living in Sydney and being put up at 4-star, 5-star hotels and then returning even home to Melbourne and living the city life and then going back home to Alice Springs. Like, a lot of people in my life just don't understand how much of a toll that can take, and it's really nice to have mob like, you know, Katanya and Thomas and Sarah who just understand, you know, why we might have different experiences and the degree of which we go between the two worlds may differ. We still have a sense of what it's like and how much emotional and mental labour that might take on top of being an actor where you have to be emotionally available on command every single day for 12 to 16 hours a day. And yeah, that's something that I could write a whole book about, and I probably hope to one day, about like how exhausting that can be, but it's just nice to have other people around like that.
Yeah, totally. And I also heard that you played a role in getting Miss Kanina's song Black Britney featured on the show. How did that come about? Like, did you already know Miss Kanina or...?
Yeah, so Kinney and I actually worked together a little bit at a clothing store in Melbourne, and that's where we first met. And, yeah, I love Kinney. She's incredible. She's so staunch, and her music is just amazing. She's going to be one of Australia's top singers and rappers, top artists, I reckon. Like, I was actually watching a video of her from 20... 23 the other day, and just it was her doing a gig in a bar, and I was like, oh my god, sis, you're so deadly, and she's come so far. And you know, that part, I don't want to take full credit for that. I know that I might have suggested it to some directors potentially, but you know, like, credit does have to go to our music supervisors on Heartbreak of Season 2, because they would have done a lot of the research and stuff. And you know, while I think I might have chucked Kinney's name in the ring and stuff, I do think that, you know, she also needs to credit herself, because she makes incredible music, and it's not hard to find her once you start looking for some amazing Australian, like, mainstream music, and that's something that's going to fit a show. And they're like, oh, we've got a scene where we've got, like, a young black girl who's running in slow motion while playing footy, and we want to make her look really deadly. And then, you know, like, it wouldn't have been hard to find Kinney's song, because she is amazing like that.
She is, and I love her music, and I watched her perform. I think she performed at the Nemas, and I was watching that, and I was just like, I think that was, like, one of the first times I'd, like, seen her performing live. And yeah, she's incredible, like, so staunch, so amazing. And
her stage presence is insane.
And you also won the inaugural Pedestrian Television Screen Star of the Year Award for your performance on the show. What was it like to be recognised in that way?
Oh, it was deadly. I wasn't expecting it at all. I'm a very socially anxious person. I get really, 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 really nervous in new spaces, and I shut down a lot. And I think going to the Pedestrian Awards and just being around a bunch of people who wanted to just celebrate other Australians in art and culture and stuff was just reminded me of what I do and how lucky I am. And, you know, and it's okay to celebrate these things. I think just, like, a lot of the time as mob, we're so clenched, and I clench myself a lot of the times because of, you know, sad things happening in life or having to go back home to family members passing away all the time. And, you know, last year especially was a really horrible time for me mental health wise. And I think I was just so clenched, and to have a Pedestrian kind of reach out and say, we want to recognize you for your work, was a really nice moment that gave me, just like, as a person, permission to sit back and kind of just enjoy the fruits of my labor a little bit, and just remind myself that, hey, like, yeah, it's okay to sit down and be happy for a little bit and celebrate. And yeah, moments like that, I try to tell myself it's a nice reminder to just breathe. And I'm very grateful for it.
And I also want to talk about the Stan miniseries, Thou Shalt Not Steal, where you play Robin, a young Aboriginal girl from Alice Springs. Can you tell us about the show and, yeah, what drew you to the role, a little bit about the show and, yeah, that opportunity to star in this miniseries?
Yeah. Do you know what? I got the briefing in 2023. I saw the brief, and the brief literally said, this is a young Aboriginal girl from Jay Creek, which is, back in the day, was a mission, like, out west of Alice. Jay Creek happens to be the, like, exact piece of land that my family live on. We are, like, we're western Arundaside, out of this place called Wupatucka, which is where we live. And we've got native title over that area, and that happens to encompass the mission of Jay Creek. So on my license at home, it literally says Jay Creek. I saw that in the briefing and said, nah, this is ridiculous. This is about a young girl from the piece of land that I come from. And this is, like, it's insane to me. I was like, I have to get this role. If they cast anybody else in this role, I'm going to be, like, swinging.
Yeah.
And I said to my friend, I was like, oi, come over now. We need to put this tape down. And they were like, do you need to prepare? And I was like, nah, I don't need to do nothing. Like, come right now. I need to put this tape down. As if this is, like, if the universe does not give me this role, I'm just going to quit altogether. And I put the tape down. And then I found out, like, from later on, I think I was one of, like, the last people they looked at, because Dylan didn't know that I was from Alice, and he hadn't seen Heartbreak High as well, because obviously, like, different target audience. And so I think he watched the tape, and I think I said in the intro or something, I was like, my name is Shirley Watson, I'm an Arunda woman from Barntwa. And I was so, like, I'm from here, this is, like, I'm from this country, this is, like, my grandfather's country, this is my grandmother's country. I heard back from them, and the process just kind of became very, but not very quick, actually. I think I went into filming season two of Heartbreak High, and then I had a few chemistry reads and callbacks, because that's the process when you're casting. You got to go in a couple of times. And then I think I was on set at Heartbreak High one day, and then I got a text from Dylan River, and he said, I'm gonna message your agents and give you an offer tomorrow. And I just kind of did like a little squeak, like a celebration squeak.
Yeah.
And one of my producers clocked it at the time, and she was like, what are you doing that for? And I was like, oh, I just booked this role. And she was like, what the hell? You just booked a lead and you did something so quiet about it. And I was like, yeah, I'm working.
What's the process been like with, you know, filming and all of that sort of thing for the show?
It was incredible. We went back home. We filmed on like my block, which is crazy. There's a scene in the show where I'm standing and the hill that I grew up underneath, which I'm not going to say for privacy reasons, but a lot of mom from Alice will know, like, that's our hill. And the actual proper like mountain range that I grew up underneath, like directly underneath, is in the show. And it's a shot of me standing underneath it. It was crazy. It was deadly because, like, when you go away and you train for your discipline, especially when you do something on stage, I kind of accepted the fact that my family were never going to see me work. My family don't have the means to get themselves down to Melbourne, let alone see a theatre show. And even if I was working in theatre, I don't think I would have had the means to transport anyone. My mum really didn't know what I was training for when I'd went away for uni. She was just like, oh, yeah, she's just doing something with singing. Like, the music theatre it's not prevalent in Alice Springs to a point where people recognise it culturally like that. And so when I booked Screen, suddenly all of my family had access to my performances and they could watch me on Heartbreak High. And going home and filming and working was just like, I could just cry thinking about how grateful I am for it. And it was validating, and it was, you know, going home and being able to like take all of these years work, at the time almost a decade's worth of work, back to where I was like leading a series and my family coming out to set and like watching me work and, you know, showing Will McDonald, who was also in the show with me, who's one of my very, very, very good friends and worked with me on Heartbreak High, showing him country and being like, yeah, man, this is where I grew up. This is like the bush. And I was like, yeah, I walk around here. We'd walk around town and people in Alice are like really friendly, and a lot of the mob there, they'll just come and start talking to you like they know you. And, you know, they'd walk up to Will and just start talking to him because everybody recognizes him from Home and Away, and everybody in Alice Springs watches Home and Away. And so they'd just walk up to him and say, hello, Will, how are you going? And, you know, I was so happy to be able to show him the world that I was constantly trying to explain to a lot of my friends over on the East Coast, how different it is.
Was it like a full circle moment as well, just to, you know, like you went away, like you did boarding school and you went and studied the arts, and then, you know, getting to, like you said, go back home and be able to do what you had been training for? Like, was it also very surreal and like a full circle moment for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, really full circle. I don't think I've processed it yet. I probably won't process it for another good 20, 30 years when I look back and realize, but I'm so grateful for it. Like, it's completely changed the way I view my work. And, you know, even just working as a lead and having so many contact hours and so many, you know, but just doing it with an incredible crew, and incredible creatives like Dylan River and Tanith Glyn Maloney, who's also from Alice, and, you know, she's a producer and writer on the show, and just like having mob around, like not even, but like mob that speaks your lingo as well, because it's like, you know, I love working with mob here as well, and that's always comforting. And but there was just like a different element that got added when it was specifically mob from Alice that were the head creatives of this. So there was Dylan, who, you know, like created and directed, and then Tanis, who produced and was on the writing team as well, and then I was leading, and then we had other people around, like we had Tyson Perkins, who was DOP, and it was just like there was something in the air that was made me feel so comfortable to make decisions and offers that I would never have made had I not been filming on country.
And another thing that you've also done is you stepped into the fashion world. You've modelled for House of Dizzy, a brand known for its really bold First Nations designs and jewellery. How did that opportunity come about, and what was it like modelling for House of Dizzy?
Yeah, it was fun. It was good. I'm not a model at all. I don't like the craft. The craft of modelling is hard. I have the utmost respect for models because I could never do it. It could never be me, you know, like... Actors, we sit there in our dressing gowns on set, and somebody's holding an umbrella over us, and I say, could I please get a cup of tea? And somebody will go and get me a cup of tea and bring it back, and then I say, I'm a bit cold now, and they say, we'll give you a hot water bottle and we'll sew it into your dressing gown. Like, are you okay? And then models are like, oh yeah, I just got off like a 16-hour flight. I'm about to go and walk in this show and then have on sleep deprivation, go and do this shoot because I need to make my rent this week. And they're just like the grind, and like the actors grind like that as well. But like modeling, I just don't know how they do it. It's incredible the work that they do. And I can't do that. When I did any shoot that I ever do is I'm still learning and I'm still trying to get my head around it. And when I did work with Christy, and Jazzy, Christy owns House of Dizzy, and Jazzy, who was her social media manager at the time, contacted me and said, hey, do you want to do this? And I said, yeah, I want to kind of immerse myself more in the Indigenous community in Melbourne. I wanted to just try and find my way into integrating myself into the community and getting to know the mob down here a bit more, especially because, you know, I'd trained on Wurundjeri and Boonwurrung country, and I feel like I kind of owe that to the mob here to try and give back as much as I can and immerse myself into people. And so I was like starting with the small businesses, and you know, Christy was like, yeah, do you want to model some of these things? And I was like, yeah, I'll do it.
And with, like you've mentioned, First Nations representation in film and TV, like it is growing, but there's still so, so much work that needs to be done in that space. How do you see your role in that space?
That's a really, really interesting question. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of what best I can do to lay myself down kind of as a stepping stone, the way that other, particularly Black women before me, have done, to make sure these young ones know that they can occupy as much space as they want to, and just see what I can do to, you know, because at the end of the day, it always comes back to the kids. I'm always like, I'll just sit there and have my cry and be like, it doesn't matter though, because like, you know, like these little kids who come up to me and tell me all this stuff about how much, you know, my characters mean to them will just like trump anything at the end of any day. And I just, you know, like I want to just make sure that they can see themselves represented in every type of like multifaceted way. And yeah, it's always about what can I do to contribute in that way.
And what's next for you? Are there any other projects on the horizon that you can fill us in on, or are you just taking a little bit of a break? Or, yeah, what's next for you?
I'm trying to practice resting, which is something that's very hard for me to do. But, you know, to rest is a privilege. And I think I'm just going to try and stay creative, and I'm going to wait for this season of Heartbreak High to come out. And I think I'm just trying to stay around like-minded people, and yeah, stay creative. My partner, who is studying in the UK, doing his master's over there, is coming back finally. So I think I'm just going to like sit down and chill out for a little bit with him. And I want to learn how to produce and eventually direct, but I want to do a lot more behind the scenes stuff. And yeah, just keep staying creative and just working with my spirit and getting to know myself at this age a little bit more, because that ultimately makes you a better artist and a better actor when you know yourself deeply, and that takes the work of getting to know yourself.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming on NITV Radio and having a chat to us about your career and how you got into it, and just a bit about how you grew up. It's been really interesting, and it's been really, really lovely to chat to you, and all the best with the future and, you know, what's coming next for you. And I'm sure there's lots and lots of big things coming your way, because you've done such an incredible job so far. And yeah, I just want to thank you so much for coming on to have a chat to me.
Thank you so much. Thank you for reaching out as well. I've loved having a chat.
need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.